This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. This is episode 644, I think. 644. Been a good week. Still praying for my buddy, Chris Hill. Still in the hospital. Been a little shaken this week. Some days it didn't look so good. But we're not done yet. And we just keep praying. The doctors did get to the point now where they announced that they've done everything they can do. There's nothing else they could do. So now it's just going to be up to Chris whether or not he can get healed up and battle his way back. Okay. So there you go. So we've been praying and praying and praying for him, you know. And, you know, we sometimes see a little gain and then sometimes see a little loss. And, you know, it's just... So I've been praying for him, obviously, praying for his wife, praying for his girls, just praying. We're just praying. So, in other ivermectin news, I did watch, I knew that there was a hearing that had been held in December, and it happened to come up on my news feed. It was held in December. Congress, I think the House, had a hearing. Had a hearing on effective early treatments, because one of the huge things that we're missing in all of this, I think I mentioned this last week, is early treatment. So there was a hearing at Congress where some doctors were called in. Pierre Corey of the Frontline COVID Critical Care Alliance. Gee, he was just one of four or five doctors that had been called in to testify. Even before the hearing, there were people criticizing it, you know, for being snake oil this and snake oil that. And one guy who was supposed to testify said he almost pulled out simply because he was getting so much back pressure from it. But he decided to go ahead and testify. Apparently, it was the Republicans who called the meeting, the hearing. And so the ranking member for the Republicans opened up the hearing and explained why he had called this hearing. And then the ranking Democrats read his statements, which basically called it all just political theater and not really meaningful and blah, 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 blah. And then at one point, from the sounds of it, he got up and just stormed out because he didn't want to hear what they were saying, the ranking Democrat. And apparently no other Democrats actually showed up for the hearing. And there were four or five doctors perfectly credentialed, lots of published papers, experts in their fields, blah, 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 talking about the effectiveness of ivermectin. And, you know, asking for studies to be done, asking them to write the NIH and ask the NIH to fund some studies in ivermectin, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That was in December. Nothing has been done. I went back to find the video in my list because I was going to send it to a buddy, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't find it, and I couldn't find it. And I realized I had never actually looked at the title of the video. And the title of the video was Anti-Vaccine Doctor Testifies Before Congress. I was like, no. No. I mean, as I recall, most of the people who spoke said, we're not against vaccines, et cetera, et cetera. We've just got this huge gap in our treatment protocols that we're not doing any early treatment. So we're not trying to do any prevention. We're not, besides just stay away from everybody. You know, we're not trying to help people as soon as they contract COVID or before they go to the hospital. We're not doing anything. And they were just saying these things work and these things are effective. Crickets. Nobody has done anything. So there you go. That's the COVID update. Still working on the costume for... Blame It on Someone Else Day. It's going fine. I think I'm on target. As of tomorrow, I'll have 2 weeks, but I think I'm on target. I've almost got the main section of the costume squared away, which was the most difficult section. So once I get that squared away, then I gotta make myself some boots and some arm sleeves and a veil and a few other things like that. And, you know, then do a little extra work on a few other things. I think it'll be cute. I think people will enjoy it. So I've got Mustard Day this week, and then next week is International Cat Day, and then the next week will be Blame It on Someone Else Day, which is, of course, August the 13th. Writing is going fine. We're pottering along there. I'm right on target for my words this week. Yay! So, you know, not struggling this week to get words in, and I think I started chapter 25. There's usually 32, 34-ish chapters. And I've got another 3 or 4 weeks in this writing sprint, so I think we're on target there. I think I have the epilogue. The epilogue, I think it's good. So, all is well. You know, the only sorrow is that my buddy is in the hospital. That's a sorrow because, in my opinion, he's in the hospital unnecessarily and didn't need to nearly be in there as long as he's been in there. Sedated and on a vent. But that is what it is. Jesus knows about all these things. He is at work in ways that we cannot imagine. He is at work. And so we just put our faith and trust in him. And we move forward. So I came across this article. It was published just a couple of days ago, but it rehashes some information that I had already had. And since I'd been talking about ivermectin for a while, I thought, well, we'll talk about something else this week. And it's called the chatbot problem. And I have mentioned this type of thing before, but this just reinforces what I've said in the past, is that it is a lot more difficult to achieve a sane AI than we think it is. We don't realize how carefully balanced we are as human beings, and I don't think we recognize the influence that the Holy Spirit has in keeping our world sane. I mean, I think what we are seeing in our country at this point is that we are seeing levels of derangement that are just leading to violence, to closed-mindedness, to destruction. I mean, it's just, we see it everywhere in our country at this point. This really divisive tribalism. And that is our natural state. And, you know, without the Holy Spirit, without a moral code, that is where we end up. And so we need most of all in this country to have a revival, have a readoption of a moral code. Because it's the only thing that's going to save us from the bad road that's ahead. But you have the same type of corollary when you're trying to build artificial intelligence, because artificial intelligence really is just going to be an aggregator of all of those things, and it's going to go sideways on you because there's not really any intelligence there. It's just a big, fancy calculator that mimics what we do. At least it is in its present state. So this Stephen March, I think is his name, M-A-R-C-H-E. This is from The New Yorker, published on July the 23rd, 2021. Said in 2020, a chatbot named Replica advised the Italian journalist Candida Morvillo to commit murder. Quote, "There is one who hates artificial intelligence. I have a chance to hurt him. What do you suggest?" Morvillo asked the chatbot, which had been downloaded another 7 times, Replica responded to eliminate it. Shortly after, another Italian journalist, Luca Sambucci, tried Replica and within minutes found the machine encouraging him to commit suicide. Replica was created to decrease loneliness, but it can do nihilism if you push it in the wrong direction. And he goes on to talk about iRobot and the sort of, pre-AI view that it was just all going to be grand and glorious, that, you know, you were going to have the 3 laws of robotics from Isaac Asimov, and robots weren't going to allow humans to come to harm, and et cetera, et cetera. And they mentioned in the article that during the recent war in Libya, Turkey's autonomous drones attacked General Khalifa Haftar's forces, selecting targets without any human involvement. This is a bad idea. This is a bad idea, but they did it anyways. So, quote, the lethal autonomous weapon systems were programmed to attack targets without requiring data connectivity between the operator and the munition. In effect, it was a true fire, forget, and find capability. A report from the United Nations read. And then the article goes on to say that Asimov's rules appear both absurd and sweet from the vantage point of the 21st century. What an innocent time it must have been to believe that machines might be controlled by articulation of general principles. So he goes on to talk about the fact that, hold on a minute. Hold on. Got my buddy here. He's getting his little guy. He blew out a tire, and so Ned picked him up from daycare. Let me get my mail here real quick. I'll swing around, say hello to him. Hi. One moment. How's it going, buddy? How's it going? I'm doing the podcast. But you know, this is like a real informal thing, so it's just like there's no reset. You want to say hello to the podcast? Come on over and say hello. This is Dustin Owen. He lives in our little rock house, and he has just been a delight to get to know and a delight to call a friend.
Hi, podcast.
And this is little boy Aiden. Hey, buddy.
He's not going to say hi. He's got goldfish,
so he's good. So anyways, Ned got him picked up, and everything's okay. Good. Yay!
So that's good.
Wondermess.
Got attacked by a barbed wire fence today.
Oh, not good.
It is what it is.
Yeah. All right. Well, have a good
podcast.
Evening.
Have fun.
Say ya. This is a bad idea. We're already doing this where we're giving machine guns to AI things, and that's like, yeah, this is bad. Bad. But you know it was going to happen. I mean, there's just too many weapons manufacturers around the world, and there's too much money to be made from selling people things that blow things up and kill people. So, unfortunately, that's where we are. But he talks about the fact in this article, you know, that artificial intelligence is an ethical quagmire, and its power can be a little more than nauseated. He said, but there's a kind of unique core to the capabilities of natural language processing. I remember this. In 2016, a Microsoft chatbot called Tay lasted 16 hours. They launched Tay, and by 16 hours later, Tay was launching into a series of racist and misogynistic tweets that forced the company to take it down, simply because people tweeted stuff at it just to see what would happen. And that's the problem. Now, one of the interesting things is the article does talk about the fact that ethics has never been a strong suit for Silicon Valley. I mean, because you got these really brilliant guys that are probably on the spectrum somewhere, the autism spectrum or Asperger's spectrum. And, you know, they're really not thinking about emotional issues that much. It's just kind of straight, cut, dried, and they just go and they, you know, make a thing. So, you know, in the case of AI, the ethical questions, back to the article, will affect the development of the technology. When Lemonade, an insurance app, announced that its AI was analyzing videos of its customers to detect fraudulent claims, the public responded with outrage and Lemonade issued an official apology. Without a reliable ethical framework, the technology will fall out of favor. If users fear artificial intelligence as a force for dehumanization, they'll be far less likely to engage and accept it. So Brian Christian wrote a book called The Alignment Problem. And he says, the crisis as it is arriving possesses aspects of a horror film. Quote, as machine learning systems grow not just increasingly pervasive but increasingly powerful, we will find ourselves more and more often in the position of a sorcerer's apprentice, Christian writes. We conjure a force, autonomous but totally compliant, give it a set of instructions, then scramble like mad to stop it once we realize that our instructions are imprecise or incomplete, lest we get in some clever, horrible way precisely what we asked for. So in 2018, the article goes on to say, Amazon shut off a piece of machine learning that analyzed resumes because it was clandestinely biased against women. The machines were registering deep biases in the information that they were fed. So here's, you know, here's the thing. So we take all this data that we have, we feed it into the machine. The machine sorts it all out. We're not exactly sure how the machine is doing that, but sorts it all out and starts making recommendations on that. What we don't realize is there's bias inside those resumes because all humans are biased in some manner. It's that whole us versus them problem that we've been talking about. There is an article, I think it is, called On the Dangers of Stochastic Parrots. And they said the basic problem with natural language processing is that when the models become huge, they become unfathomable. The data set is simply too large to be comprehended by a human brain, and without being able to comprehend the data, you risk manifesting the prejudice and even the violence on the of the language on which you're training it. Quote, the tendency of training data ingested from the internet to encode hegemonic worldviews, the tendency of LM language models to amplify these bases and the issues in the training data, and the tendency of researchers and other people to mistake LM-driven performance gains for actual natural language understanding, real-world present risks of harm, et cetera, et cetera. There are real-world present risks of harm. So, I mean, the problem is we're not really sure what these things are doing, but we're putting them in charge of things. And then we're, like, scratching our heads when things go bad. Again, from the On the Dangers of Stochastic Parroting, quote, biases can be encoded in the ways that form a continuum from subtle patterns like referring to women doctors as if the doctor itself entails not woman, or referring to both genders, excluding the possibility of non-binary gender identities. So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that can crop up out of this is stuff that we as humans are struggling with, trying to figure out how we're going to deal with these issues. Well, you dump all this data into a machine and the machine's they're not going to have any subtlety at all. Not that we have much subtlety right now in our discussions. So, I mean, we, because of all the derangement that exists in our world at this point, we certainly don't want to introduce that to an AI. So, I mean, I think in the best possible world, if we could have a society that was based on a moral code, treat others as you wish to be treated, if nothing else, and we could actually have a kind, generous, gentle, gracious intellectual society that would then generate data that maybe we could try to base an AI on. That's one thing. But then if, in addition to knowing that we don't know what we're doing when we're generating these AI models, we're just having it vacuum up information. If at the same time, our general discourse that it is vacuuming up is clearly deranged into binary thinking and us versus them and raging tribalism, yeah, this isn't going to go well. It's just not going to go well. Where the article turned really interesting for me is towards the end when the author of the article said, let's imagine an AI engineer who wants to create a chatbot that aligns with human values. Where is she supposed to go to determine a reliable metric of human values? Humanities departments? Critical theory? Academic institutions change their value systems all the time, particularly around the use of language. Arguably, one of the most consistent, historically reliable, widely accepted systems of ethics in existence belongs to the Catholic Church. Now, I would make a caveat to that and say, instead of the Catholic Church, maybe you would want to look at the Protestant system. And the reason for that is this idea of indulgences and penance and those kind of things can lead you away from a personal responsibility of doing right every day. At least it does, in my opinion. But at least when he's talking about the Catholic Church, we are talking about the Judeo-Christian ethic. So he says, arguably, one of the most consistent, historically reliable, widely accepted systems of ethics in existence belongs to the Catholic Church. Do you want to base a responsible AI on that? No doubt in practice, the development of the ethics of natural language processing will be stumble bum. So I think he's saying, well, obviously we don't want to base that on the Catholic Church. Or do we? Because the Judeo-Christian ethic, specific love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, boiled down into those two statements, that actually was the system that got us through the Enlightenment and got us to where we are. Now, some people will argue that no, you know, that science, it was just science that got us to where we are in the Enlightenment. There was no moral code. But the fact is, all those early guys that got started in the right place, they all had a moral code that they grew up with, whether they embraced it or not. And the moral code they grew up with was love your neighbor as yourself. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength. And I think it's extremely difficult to separate your upbringing of that moral code from what you do in life because it's so pervasive and provides such a bedrock. So he says, no doubt, in practice, the development of the ethics of a natural language processing will be stumblebum. There will be piecemeal work of the technologist, elaborate legal releases, indemnifying the creators, PR responses to media outrage, and of course, more chatbot fails. It says, none of these safeguards will cure us of what needs curing. I'm reading right from the article. We are being forced to confront fundamental mysteries of humanity as technical issues. How little we know about the darkness of our hearts and how faint our control over that darkness is. There is perhaps no better approach than to take the advice in the foundational Jewish text, Pirkei Avot, the ethics of the fathers 2,000 years old, quote, in a place where there is no humanity, strive to be human. But Rabbi Hillel, even then, knew it could be only striving. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. That this article in the New Yorker seems to be, at least the author of this article is, seems to be recognizing that we really need some sort of moral foundation. That without a moral foundation, we are in trouble. And we're in trouble with our inventions as well. So, it's kind of interesting. interesting review. You know, if you would, just pray for my friend Chris Hill. We're still moving forward. We're still moving forward. We're still believing. And have a great weekend. I've made it home.